We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Wolverines look to bounce back after a loss in Happy Valley, and no better opponent to bounce back with than the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We'll take a look back at last week's game as well as a look ahead to Notre Dame. You're listening to In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Saturday's coming. It's Notre Dame. It's prime time. It's a night game in the big house. So we have the opportunity to go out there and play on a big stage again.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
We are coming to you from the Studio of Champions inside Schembechler Hall, and we get a chance to talk about a loss, a 28-21 loss in Happy Valley. And to do that, I'm going to bring in the guy that stepped into some big shoes for Doug Karsh as he was out, Brian Bush. You guys hear him every week here. He stepped in, did the pregame show with me, was on the sidelines. And Brian, I've got to ask you, you were at the whiteout. What was the experience like for you?
It was pretty cool to be there. Don't get me wrong. I wanted Michigan to win just as bad as everybody else. But that's a special thing in college football. And as we'll talk about what the Wolverines did, this is a different feel from our post-Wisconsin podcasts. I know they didn't get the win, and that's what's most important in this game. We're not going to sugarcoat it. We're not going to say, hey, moral victories. That's not what the University of Michigan's all about. But you can appreciate a really good college football game. You can appreciate a really good college atmosphere. And I am 10 times more excited about this Saturday because it'll be my first time in the big house.
You know what? You told me that last weekend, and it's hard to believe that we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and you've been doing the pregame show with Doug and I back there in Winston-Salem for, what, 4 or 5 years now, and you haven't had the opportunity to be in the big house. It's special. I can't wait to hear next week you talk about your first experience in the big house, because it happens to everybody at some point. Mm. And for those that are listening to the podcast, obviously, we tell you we're coming from inside Schembechler Hall. When you download the podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, and give us a review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, because we want to continue to be the best that we can be. We want to give you all the information from inside Schembechler Hall, what's going on with the team, when we look back, what to look forward to as we continue to move forward in this college football season.
You know, but, and John, also, they can give their review on the big shoes you filled in for on Saturday for Dan Dierdorf. Those are, no offense to Doug Karsh, but those are much bigger shoes to fill in for with Dan Dierdorf.
They are, and hopefully what they say, because I've had the opportunity to do it over the last couple of years whenever Dan has had a prior engagement, and I've learned so much from Dan Dierdorf in just listening to him, watching him prepare, talking to him about football games. It's been a tremendous experience for me, and I look forward to all the games that I get to listen to him continue to do, whether it's in the big house or in-state college or wherever we may take our travels may take us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, John, let's get into 7 from 77 as we look back to Penn State and ahead to Notre Dame. First things first, John. How's the mood around Schembechler Hall after the loss on Saturday?
Well, anytime you have a loss, you're disappointed. And you look to all the opportunities that Michigan had, whether it was dropped passes in the first half, whether it was penalties, unforced errors. And then you look into the second half and you think, all right, if that game was just a minute longer, You know, Michigan, in my estimation, had all the momentum, could have pulled out a victory, but the game is only 60 minutes long. That's what it took for Penn State to eliminate Michigan, and it's disappointing. But when you look ahead, if you are going to take a loss like that, you want to come back against a top-ranked opponent so that you can, you know, right the wrongs and justify whatever it is that you did wrong, go out there and make a statement. You know, it's unlike Wisconsin where you come back and you play Rutgers. You can't really say anything about that win against Rutgers, but now you lose in a tight game in Happy Valley and you get a chance to come back and you play against Notre Dame. It's a great opportunity for these kids to respond to the loss in Happy Valley.
Number two, now that the result is a few days old and the team's moved on to Notre Dame, do you feel better or worse about this program than you did in advance of Saturday? Obviously, you want this team to win. You expect them to win. But as we discussed earlier, the Wisconsin game, it's a heck of a lot different than what happened Saturday in Happy Valley. Despite the loss, do you feel like this program is on the rise? The ascending players, ascending team type of concept that you hear from Coach Harbaugh a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, I said this going into halftime as Jim and I were breaking down the first half, looking ahead to the second half against Penn State. It felt like we had all the momentum because we finally found a rhythm on offense. We started to move the ball a little bit on the ground. We started to find some receivers, and that touchdown run by Zach Charbonnet, the first touchdown of the game for Michigan, it was a 12-yard run, and he went in untouched. And you finally saw a rhythm on offense to get down to the 12-yard line, to punch the ball in. And that's what Michigan has to continue to do. They did it in the second half, but they've got to eliminate the big plays on defense. The offense has to continue to put drives together so the defense isn't out there. And I know that we controlled the time of possession, and that's a huge component. But when you look back to this game, the one thing that continues to frustrate me and that I don't feel better about is the turnover. They had one turnover. And we lost the turnover battle 1-0. And some may think, well, that's not a big deal. Well, Penn State turned around and scored off of that turnover. That possession could have been the difference in the ballgame. We lost 28-21. They scored 7 points off of that turnover. We have to figure out a way to get a goose egg in that column. And when that happens, you'll have an opportunity to beat teams like Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan State. If that doesn't happen, it's going to be a hard road to try and run down.
Number three, the one play that obviously will resonate from Saturday's game, Ronnie Bell's drop late. I was blown away by the team's support of him in the immediate aftermath of that, and even after the game had ended and the players were going to the locker room, in the locker room. Two-part question. First, for the individual, how can Ronnie use that to propel him to greater heights with an incredible talent for the game of football? And how can the Wolverines as a team, as a program, use that galvanizing moment to bring them closer together?
Well, for Ronnie Bell, he's a competitor. And anytime you're a competitor, you look at what you did good and what you didn't do well in a game. And it doesn't just come down to the last play. It goes throughout the game. And there are going to always be things where you look at and you say, gosh, if I had done that better in the second quarter, maybe we weren't in that position at the end of the game to have a fourth down conversion for a touchdown to tie the game up. And Ronnie Bell will look at that final play and say, if I had only caught that ball. And he'll look at it and say, okay, you know, maybe I need to catch it better with my hands, or I need to be more aware of my surroundings and who's around me, and, you know, and learn more about the defenses. Those are all things that a young player has to continue to grow with. And, you know, sometimes you learn better from your mistakes and you learn more moving forward than you do from your successes. And Ronnie Bell has had a lot of successes. He's had 57 yards receiving, he's 57 yards from reaching the 500 mark. He's the leading receiver right now. He is having a tremendous season. The reason Michigan was in position at the end of the game to possibly tie the game up was Ronnie Bell. And I was talking to Derek Alexander, former wide receiver for Michigan and terrific player, All-American. He's a coach now at, I think it's Morgan State. And one of the statements that he had said was, you know, when you're a receiver and you look at everything that you do during a game, and say on average there's 75 plays, and Ronnie Bell had 5 catches in this game. Well, what's he doing on the other 70 plays? And I would tell everybody, turn that game back on, and you watch number 8. On those 70 plays, and I don't know how many total he played, it wasn't all 70, but turn on the plays where he is not catching the football. He's out there blocking. He's out there running his routes as hard as he possibly can. There's nobody that wants it more than Ronnie Bell. And so then moving forward, that moment is galvanizing these guys. And you'll get a chance to hear from Carlo Kemp later. When we sat down and talked, we talked about that moment and the support and the family that this team is. And, you know, they're rallying around him. They want Ronnie to be successful, and they understand what he has meant to this offense. They understand what he means to this team and that they need him. They're letting him know, hey, we need you to be a major part. You can't sit there and wallow in the fact that we lost this game or you had a bad play. You've got to continue to improve and get better so that when that same thing happens against Notre Dame, we're victorious in that situation.
Speaking of Notre Dame, number four, let's do what the team's done, and that's turn the page to the Fighting Irish. Give us your thoughts on Brian Kelly's offense and what the Wolverines' defense will need to do to have success against them.
Well, what they have to do is continue what they did over the last couple of weeks, and that's find the running game. It wasn't what we wanted it to be in the first half, but in the second half they were able to find that, and it helped continue to create that momentum, that rhythm that they're looking for. And I'll give you just a quick stat. Michigan averaged 3.5 yards per carry. They scored 21 points and had 417 total yards of offense against Penn State. And this is a Penn State defense that ranked first in yards per carry with 1.59 yards, second in points allowed. They only allowed 8.2 going into that game. And they were fourth in yards allowed total at 259, let's basically say 260 yards per game. So this offense of Michigan needs to look at those numbers and say, you know what, we did this against a pretty good defense. Now let's look at, you know, what we have to do against Notre Dame. And when you think about this Notre Dame team, and I know you asked me about their offense, Ian Book is the guy that stirs the drink for this offense. Right now, just a little bit above 60% completion percentage. He's been a good decision maker in terms of, you know, 14 touchdowns to only two interceptions. He's a guy that makes good decisions out there, and he's the guy that gets this offense going. He puts them in good plays, and if there's nothing there, in terms of the pass game, he will tuck it and run it. He's their second leading rusher right now. Their leading rusher, Tony Jones Jr., is averaging about 7 yards per carry. So the defense is going to have to step up, as they have done in the last few weeks, and continue to shut down the run. Kwity Paye has been an integral part of that. Carlo Kemp, as we'll talk to in just a little bit. But last week, especially in the second half, the defense did a great job of forcing Penn State off the field. Last week, the Nittany Lions were forced to punt 8 times, and that's their highest total since 2015. So you know what the defense is doing is working. What they have to do is eliminate the big plays. Tony Jones Jr., his long run of the year, 43 yards. They have to find a way to make sure that he doesn't get that 7 yards average. When you look at their receivers, they've got guys that have big plays. Chase Claypool, their leading receiver, a 37-yard pass. You start to work yourself down, and Javon McKinley, who hasn't seen a lot of time, but he's got a 65-yard touchdown reception. They have guys with that big play potential. So the key for the defense this week is to eliminate those big plays. If they do that, Michigan will have a chance to win.
All right, John, how about the other side for number five on today's 7 from 77? Notre Dame's defense against Michigan's offense. How can the Wolverines move the ball against the Irish?
Well, they've got to establish the run. And I know I started to get into this as we were talking about, because I'm so excited about what I saw from the offense. Shea Patterson did a good job of reading the defense, taking what the defense was giving him last week, and that's really where we wanted to see him get to. And when you look at what we were able to do offensively and to find that rhythm, it was Ronnie Bell, you know, out in the flat with blockers in front of him. It was Tariq Black. It was Donovan Peoples-Jones with some dink and dunks. And there was a big pass play to Nico Collins where it was inadvertently by the official called a offensive pass interference or inappropriately called, I should say, not inadvertently. He did it on purpose. But, you know, I didn't think that was pass interference. But you got to deal with that. It showed that we have that potential to go downfield. But what was more important was, hey, that big play wasn't there all game long. So let's find those underneath routes. They did a great job of finding Nick Eubanks. And when that happens and you start to spread the defense out, now all of a sudden Zach Charbonnet will find rushing lanes. And this is a very good defensive front for Notre Dame. Two new guys on the inside. They've been very good at stopping the run in their linebacking core. All three linebackers are new this year. Now, we're halfway through the season, so we can't say they're new to the system, but they have stepped up and played extremely well. So a top-ranked offense, top-ranked defense. This is going to be a matchup where Shea Patterson, again, has to be able to distribute the football to his receivers. That will help open up the run game. And when they get an opportunity to take some shots downfield, they've got to make sure that they do everything right. Because right now, it's you know, sometimes you feel like you're playing against that extra opponent in the officials. You got to take them out of it and make sure that your technique is so sound that the officials don't see anything that they could even possibly call.
Number six, we've heard your biggest key to the last handful of games being turnovers, and I'm guessing that's again the case here. So your second biggest key to Michigan knocking off Notre Dame on Saturday is?
It's the rhythm on offense. It really comes down to sustaining drives, being good on third down, finding those receivers, and then finding the holes, whether it's Zach Charbonnet or Hassan Haskins, making sure that on first down, they can get to second and five. That opens up so much more of the playbook, and you can take some of those shots downfield, and if they don't complete, then you're looking at third and five. It's manageable. Yeah, you'd like to be in third and one or convert those, and you willed on some of them, but it's finding, continuing the rhythm that we found in Happy Valley in the second half, the confidence this offense played with. If that happens, the offense is going to be able to march down the field. They won't put the defense in bad position, and the defense is going to go out there. Every time they go out there, they're going to be fresh. And that's part of why the success of the defense has had in the second half is because the offense has been able to find a rhythm, get some drives going, and the defense, every time they go out there, they're fresh.
And finally, John, I'm guessing we'll get the full feeling of this in your locker room speech a little bit later, but simply, what does Michigan versus Notre Dame and this rivalry mean to you? And as I talked about with a couple of guys after the game Saturday, how much does it help recalibrate you that you can move on from Saturday because Penn State is gone and Notre Dame comes in as the next game?
Well, you're always turning the page looking at the next game. When the next game is Notre Dame, it's an opportunity for each and every one of these guys to write their name in the history books of this rivalry. You think back to Desmond Howard. You think back to all the guys that have had big moments in this game. Remy Hamilton, 25-year anniversary this year for the kick that he had in 94 that won the game 26-24, and everything that led up to that moment. You think about the 97 game. You think about Lamar Woodley and you know, forcing fumbles, picking them up and running for touchdowns. This is a game, no matter what happens in the season, you get a chance to look at and say, who made the big plays? Who was the name we're talking about? And it's an opportunity to face a ranked opponent, to play in the big house, to play at night, all the emotion, all the excitement that builds up to it. And it's an opportunity because we don't know when this is going to happen again. It could be a decade. It could be two decades before we play Notre Dame again. This one will last for a long time.
And just so you know, if you go back to Monday's Inside Michigan Football Show, John Jansen had a chance not only to catch up with head coach Jim Harbaugh, but also with Remy Hamilton. It was really cool to hear that on Monday night, John, about his memories. You talk about guys who have made their imprint on this rivalry. Remy's one of them.
He is. He was a teammate of mine, and you guys know how I talk about kickers, but Remy Hamilton was one of the good ones, the only All-American from that position at the University of Michigan. A special guy, a special kicker, and a huge moment in Michigan history.
Speaking of huge moments in history, our bacon fact this week, there is a pumpkin pie spiced bacon that was made famous in the Foley, Minnesota area. Are you good with that or not?
I'm good with any bacon.
You don't think that that's ruining the sanctity of bacon?
No, because
good. I'm glad. I was worried.
We talked about this in the pregame about, you know, the thick cut bacon and how it's nice and juicy and you get all the goodness in a great piece of thick cut bacon. And then Jim Brandstetter came on and he talked about sprinkling maple syrup on it and putting a little brown sugar on it and getting that nice caramelized. You put a little pumpkin spice on there. I'm in for that. That sounds pretty darn good to me.
All right. Next time we go row the boat up to Minnesota, we'll swing by and get some pumpkin pie spiced bacon. That's pretty good. No. I just heard a noise.
Oh, no, that was me adjusting my seat. It might be my belt.
On to the interviews, John.
It is. And I tell you what, we got a great interview. Carlo Kemp, we've only got one player today. And I wanted to do that because I wanted to talk to a Michigan captain, a guy that's in there battling his butt off, playing great, and the value to this Michigan defense and what he does. I ask him about that, ask him about Ronnie Bell. He shares his thoughts on moving forward against playing against Notre Dame and what is to look forward to for this team. Please enjoy my interview with Carlo Kemp. Carlo Kemp joins us on In the Trenches. Carlo, let's go back to last Saturday. I know it was a loss, but when you guys ran out of the tunnel, what was that environment like? Can you share with our fans just the electricity and what it was like to run out and see all of that white?
Yeah, the whiteout at night at Penn State is definitely, you know, a game that you do remember. 2 years ago, that was really my first experience with it. And same thing, entering it, hostile environment. Everybody's in white, and they are loud, and they're rowdy, and they're going, and they're rooting for their team, and they're rooting for, you know, a good game. And it was nice having that experience 2 years ago to know what I was going to expect. And you walk in there, and you're like, it's not, even though it's probably the loudest stadium I've ever been in, you're like, okay, it's not as loud as it was last time. It's not as hostile as it was last time, just because it was my second experience. But you talk about electric, everyone's going, and, you know,
it's what you come to major college football to play.
That's a primetime game, national stage, and you're walking into an environment like that, and we're the team in all white, and they're in a whiteout, and it was it's a fun experience.
2 years ago, it was a different the outcome was the same, mm-hmm. but the game got away early, and right. and we were never able to get back into it. What was different this year where we went down 21-0, yet, you know, we still had a chance to win in the end? You guys were able to fight back. What's different about what this team is able to do, and what lessons maybe did you guys learn over the first six games that helped you stay in the game and make that comeback?
It was just, you know, we got back to the bench after that third touchdown, and we're, you know, you look up at the score and you see 21-0, and that's just not a good feeling, obviously. It's not a promising feeling, and it's like that's when your mind can go to, oh, no, what happens when it's 28, and then is it 35, or mm-hmm. where do we go from here? And especially being in an environment where you're like, oh, no, is this 2 years ago again? And that just wasn't how we wanted to end this game. It's not how we wanted to define, you know, our style on defense. And we all get to the bench and, you know, no one's got their head down. We're not, oh, man, no. We were like, no, we're battle tested. We've been through this before. One play at a time was our whole mentality. Let's get a stop. You know, don't worry about, okay, we got to stop them for the rest of the game, because that's when negative outcomes come. Let's stop them this next series. Get the ball to our offense. Whatever they do, it doesn't matter. They punt it or they score a touchdown, we get a field goal, get the ball back to our offense, and we just worked from there the rest of the game. One play at a time, one series at a time, and just take it as minimal as you could.
So the offense does go down and score. It's 21-7. What's the feeling on the sideline at that point?
Oh, it's like, okay, we're coming. And that was that feeling. And we go into the half 21-7, and after a great drive by the offense, we stopped them on defense. And we had a chance to kick a field goal and go in for a touchdown late, right before halftime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're in the locker room and nobody, you know, it's 14 points and they're getting the ball back. So there's no one thinking, okay, are they going to get 21? Are they going to score again? No one was thinking that. We're in the locker room. We're like, we go over the plays that hurt us. We're like, stop these plays. Stop these explosive plays. Let's get the ball back to our offense. Because it was a sense that we're coming. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to go down. We're not going to lay down like this. And this isn't what happened 2 years ago. And we came out there and we were motivated. And once the momentum starts shifting, that's when, you know, you start to take over. You start to believe it. And we're like, let's get this game going. Let's get back into the comeback. And sometimes, you know, you come down to the end and it's just, you know, how the game ends and doesn't necessarily go your way, but there's a lot that you can learn and take from it.
As a captain, what do you say to the guys in the locker room after a game like that?
You know, of course, emotions are high, and everyone, of course we want the win. And when you don't get it, you look at all the positives in this and you remind people that it, you know, you go into the game and you lose. And anytime you lose a game, especially in football, you only get 12 of them. Everyone's so crucial. So when you lose, it's like, all right, is our season done? Are we over? What are we playing for? And there's like, it was getting people back in that mindset where it's like, guys, look at what we accomplished, what we're able to do, down 21-0, get stops after stops, only give up one touchdown in the second half, give as many opportunities as possible as we could, and we got to carry that forward. You know, this next game is crucial because it's, are we building off of what we did previously, or are we going to be like, well, we have our second loss, what are we kind of doing right now? And that was in the feel in the locker room. It's, let's build off this. Let's come back starting today. Watch tape. Watch the game. Get ready for Notre Dame because we're back. National stage, 7:30 at the Big House.
And at the end of the game, Ronnie Bell was in the end zone. And the reason, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it all week, large part of the reason why we're even in that game was the play of Ronnie Bell. He had 5 catches, 82 yards.
Of course.
He was blocking his butt off, played well. And, you know, the end result was that, you know, he had an opportunity and it didn't happen. I did see on social media there was a lot of people attacking him, but I also know, and I saw you guys in the locker room, I saw you guys on the sidelines, you guys wrapped him up. You know, what has Ronnie Bell meant to this team, and, you know, what type of teammate is he, and what do you guys need to do as a teammate to love him up?
Ronnie Bell is that fire and that drive, and he wears his emotions, and you can see it in his play. I mean, every play, ball not coming to him, ball coming to him. Anytime he catches the ball, he's looking to do something with it. Mm-hmm. He turns up out of, catches the ball, he's upfield automatically, making probably 2 guys miss and getting extra yards. He's fighting for yards. And the best thing about him is he's not getting the ball. He's blocking for someone. He's trying to make other people successful. He's doing stuff that doesn't show up on stat sheets. You don't see blocks on stat sheets. He's doing that stuff. He comes, he you know, in our defensive huddle, and he's high-fiving us, getting us ready. And, you know, it's just little stuff like that, you know. And who knows, does it have an impact on the game? That's not the point. It's, he's involved. He's getting in. For Ronnie, yeah, who so emotionally invested into the game, and obviously you go down to the last play and he's gonna feel that, but that's not how the game is defined. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the last play of the game. You know, he doesn't catch the ball, but we still had an opportunity to go out and get a stop and force a punt. So there was still opportunity left in the game, and it's not all on him. He's been a huge reason, not just in this Penn State game, but in all of our games when we've started to get things going, when we've gotten big chunk plays, when we're the offense is needing a guy, it's been Ronnie to get him going, you know, get the ball in his hands, and he's electric.
When you talk about a guy and all of the extra things that Ronnie Bell does that don't go noticed, you play a position that doesn't get noticed a lot. And I watch you guys because I watch the line play. And when you see Cam McGrone get in there untouched to get a sack, a lot of that is because of what you guys do up front, absorbing a couple of blocks. How exciting is it for you when you see a guy like Cam McGrone or Jordan Glasgow or anybody that's in that second level of defense get inside or even make a play because of what you guys were able to do in terms of taking on a couple of blockers and doing your job allows them to do theirs?
For me personally, that's really all I really care about. I don't care about, oh, okay, I got the tackle for loss or I got the sack. That doesn't really do anything for me. You know, football is the ultimate team sport. And when I look at Coach Brown and I get the call and it's like, okay, I have a responsibility to do where, okay, I got to eat 2 blocks. But if I do that, I know Cam's going to make the play, Glass going to make the play, Kalis going to make the play, and they're probably going to make it for a loss. And that's more exciting to me than anything because watching them get excited and then I can feed off that because I want to keep doing that. Or drawing, you know, when Cam was able to come in there free on 2 of our blitz packages, one of my favorite things is setting him up for it. Uh-huh. You know, that's one of my favorite things. Get whoever it is to think I'm coming and then draw him so Cam can hit it on the run. And that's why I play. That's what I love to do. And none of that other stuff concerns me. I just want them to go make the play and see them get excited, because I'm a feed off that and keep going. And their success is why I'm happy. And to keep doing that and to, you know, keep letting them, you know, do what they do on the field is very special. And I just love watching.
That's why football is the ultimate team game, because it takes all 11 and all components. But we're talking to Carlo Kemp on In the Trenches. Carlo, now that you've had a couple of days, you've got to move on. And you still got, you know, Notre Dame this week. We've still got Michigan State. You still got Ohio State. You still got five games to play. How do you turn the page on an emotional loss and prepare for one of the bigger games of the season in Notre Dame coming to the Big House? It's going to be a night game as well. It's going to be the similar environment, but it's going to be at home.
That's the best part. You know, you look at it, you're coming off a game like we just had, and everything's invested, everything's going in, and we're in it right to the end. You know, those games are always the ones that are going to wear on you the most, especially when it doesn't go out, turn out your way. And the blessing in all this is Saturday's coming. It's Notre Dame. It's prime time. It's a night game in the Big House. So we have the opportunity to go out there and play on a big stage again. And that's the best opportunity, because now we get to work, come to practice, realize that, you know, they're a top 10 team and they're coming here and we have a responsibility to win in the Big House. And we're going to have to work hard and get back to carrying how we were playing in that Penn State game and bring it into this next game.
This is obviously a big matchup. It's a top 10 team, but it's Notre Dame. And, and it's a series that you can look back and you can think about all of the moments that have happened in this game, whether it's Roy Rountree catching the ball in the corner of the end zone in the first night game, or one of my teammates, Remy Hamilton, you know, making a kick. This is the 25-year anniversary. That's how old we are now. but it's that opportunity, and you don't know when this opportunity will come again for Michigan, because Notre Dame's not on the schedule. Does that add to the pressure or the importance of Saturday night?
It adds to the excitement of, you know, that's one thing I've kind of looked at, and this game, it's not scheduled. You know, this might be one of the last times we play them for the next couple of years, couple of seasons, and maybe even more. So it's a chance at history, honestly. And like you said, it's the 25-year anniversary, and everybody knows, you know, the importance of the Michigan-Notre Dame game. And being able to be a part of that, and you could be the class that, you know, goes in there, wins this game at home, and who knows when this game comes back again. You know, 5, 10, 20 years maybe, who knows? But this will be a staple game that people can look at and remember and hopefully talk about.
When you think about this matchup, and, you know, you take all the emotion out of it, you take the two teams out of it, but, you know, it comes down to matchups. Ian Book is a quarterback that came in last year after we played him, so you guys haven't really seen him. What have you seen from him on film? He's a guy similar to Sean Clifford that, you know, he can be dangerous with his arm, but also can tuck it and run it when he needs to.
Kind of following him from last year and to the point where he's at now, you can just kind of see that every game he's played in, he's just progressed and gotten better and gotten better. And now this season, he's having a phenomenal season. And he presents a huge challenge, like you say, just because he can obviously be very effective with his arm and his level of decisiveness, but he also has that running ability too. So that adds a little more to the importance of rush lanes, running after the quarterback and causing havoc in the backfield.
We had talked about the three previous performances, whether it was against Rutgers or Illinois or Iowa, and what the defense has been able to do. Then you take about the performance, especially in the second half against Penn State, only allowing 80 yards, and one of those was a big play to KJ Hamler. You've been able to shut down opposing offenses. What is it that this defense needs to do, or what can they improve on in this Notre Dame game?
There's always a lot we got to improve on. And, you know, one of those things is just being able to, I think a great thing that we've done is, you know, explosive plays are going to happen. I mean, you play a team like Penn State, you play a team like Notre Dame, you play these top 10 teams, they're going to happen. They got good players, and they're just like, we're going to, you know, get a sack. That's an explosive play. Things like that are going to happen in the game. And one of the things we've done a great job with is our response. You know, they get, you know, big 40-yard run or a 35-yard pass. It's okay. It's over now. Mm-hmm. We got to play the next down. And that's one of the biggest things that, you know, we all kind of looked as we're, you know, it's a mad scramble. We're trying to get to the ball and you're like, where's the ref spotting? But we're all looking at each other's eyes on the field. And we're like, guys, stay calm. We're good. This isn't, you know, it's not like, okay, they're scoring automatically. It's they still got, you know, 70 yards to go. And let's push them back. Let's knock them back. Let's force a punt. We're good. And I'd say that's one of the biggest things that we've been working on this season. And it's helped, you know, when those moments occur to just rely on each other and have that trust. And obviously going in this game, one of the biggest things is just always trying to minimize the, you know, those big explosive plays that, you know, always can shift momentum. And we've done a great job of kind of cutting those down and mimic them, minimizing them. And if they do happen, we've done a great job of, okay, it happened. Let's force a punt. Let's keep knocking them back. And we've done that. And it was shown a lot last game where, you know, they got these big plays. They might have ran a kickback. And, you know, that's huge. Got the crowd going. Everyone's excited. And especially coming out right out of the half, it's like, oh, okay. But then we take the field. And, you know, the one thing we said is that's all we need. We just needed an opportunity to defend as much grass as possible. They gave us an opportunity. They held one of our, blocked one of our guys in the back. This is all we needed. And we just took the field. We go out there. Let's force a stop.
Seven games into this season, what's the identity of this Michigan football team?
I think the identity comes throughout this week in practice and this next game. And, you know, you're at the point where it's like, where are we going to be? How are we going to define our season? And, you know, it's going to be a job of me, Shay, Josh, Ben, and Kalik to help form that identity this week in practice, where this isn't over. The season's not done. And one of the biggest things to do is not look at, okay, are we going to the Big Ten Championship? What's going to happen? That's not how you look at this. You don't look at the outcomes, and that's how we prepared when we were down 21-0 to Penn State. Next play. So next drive, anything. Now it's next game. We're not looking at, oh no, what's going to happen? Are we there? Are we not? Because that's going to distract us from this big opportunity that we have on Saturday. Prepare for Notre Dame. Let's take the field on Saturday, and we'll look up at the scoreboard at the end of the game.
Well, Carlo, I can't wait to see you on the field. I can't wait to see this Michigan team play Notre Dame. So best of luck, and thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Carlo Kemp. I sure enjoyed talking to him, and I want to thank him for stopping by. And I also want to thank Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical for today's podcast. Our friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical have been servicing Southeast Michigan for more than 50 years. They have three locations, Garden City, White Lake, and Madison Heights. George Klempert and his experienced staff of professionals work with each and every client to provide the best service available. The thing I like most about Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical is that they have done thousands of service calls and hundreds of installations over the years, and they use that knowledge to recommend the brand that works best for you. They won't sell you something you don't want or something you don't need. Like I said, they have three locations to serve you. Check out their website, familyheating.com, or give them a call at 734-422-8080. Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, family is not just their name. It's how they do business, and tell them John Jansen sent you. At this time, I want to bring back in Brian Bush, my partner here on the podcast, and let's go fourth and short, Brian.
Let's do it, John. And I think transitioning from Carlo Kemp into this first question on fourth and short is perfect because he is the epitome of what it's like to be a Michigan man. I'm just curious, you've been a competitor. You know the joys of incredible victories, and you know the heartbreak of devastating losses. In terms of handling it, how do you think these Wolverines did? Because to me, I thought they handled it really well with class and in a tough situation in a really difficult environment.
It was a difficult environment. And when you think about how they came out of it, everybody's going to have tough questions to answer. Whether it's Coach Harbaugh talking about the offense or the defense or a ranked opponent, it's going to be, you know, Ronnie Bell answering questions, Shea Patterson answering questions, Carlo Kemp, Cam McGrone. You could go right down the list. All these kids are going to have to answer difficult questions. And they did it with class. They did it with style. They did it with the way that you would expect a Michigan team to do it, all while looking forward to Notre Dame. Because we know how big this game is. We know what this moment means to Michigan fans. And they have done everything they could to get to this point and be successful.
Number two, I know you wish Michigan would play Notre Dame every year. But considering that based on how schedules come about in college football anymore, the question would be, would you like to see Michigan play Notre Dame every year? Or would you like them to see a different Power 5 opponent? Next couple of years will be Washington, then UCLA. We've got Oklahoma and Texas coming up in the middle stages of next decade. So my question to you is this. Would you sacrifice that new, fresh Power 5 opponent to face Notre Dame every year if those were the only two options you had?
Yeah, I would. And I think that there's a lot of people that would love to see Michigan play Pac-12 teams when you get a chance to play Washington. And hopefully UCLA under Chip Kelly finds a way to bounce back. And they're a good opponent. It's Oklahoma, Texas. When you talk about the teams that are competing for national championships, talk about teams that are always in the playoff conversation, those programs are, except for UCLA. And I want to see Michigan play the best. And if we're going to talk about Michigan at the end of the year and continue to prepare for a Big Ten East championship and a Big Ten championship, you've got to get yourself ready for Big Ten play. Let's always remember that Michigan is going to have to play Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State every single year. So your non-conference games at some point have to prepare you for the Big Ten championship. And that's what playing some of these opponents will help us do.
Number three on today's Fourth and Short. We're 2 weeks away from the first college football playoff rankings coming out. Just curious your national perspective and what your top four would be right now.
Well, it hasn't changed a whole lot from the last time we talked about this. I would put Ohio State as number one, LSU 2, Alabama at 3, and Oklahoma at 4. Clemson would be number 5. I'm still not sold on Trevor Lawrence in his sophomore season. He's still one of the better quarterbacks in the country. Do not get me wrong. But there's something that seems to be amiss with that Clemson team, and I don't know that they're going to be in position when it comes to the end of the year. And let's not forget, their last game of the season, they play South Carolina, who just beat Georgia and almost beat Florida. So they're going to have some stiff competition as they get to the end of this season. But I think Ohio State right now is playing as good as anybody. We'll find out against Wisconsin. Wisconsin has to bounce back from that loss they took in Champaign. But it's going to be an interesting college football weekend ahead of us. And Alabama and LSU in 3 weeks will play. Alabama is hoping that Tua Tagovailoa, their quarterback who just had ankle surgery, will be back for that game. Joe Burrow, the quarterback for LSU, has had a record-setting performance. He just broke the record for the amount of touchdowns thrown by an LSU quarterback, and it's only 7 games into the season. So there's a lot of great teams, but the most exciting thing for me is that we're not talking about just Alabama and Clemson. We're talking about a Big Ten team. We're talking about LSU. We're talking about Oklahoma. And there's still some one-loss teams that I think have a chance to make that happen.
If Clemson would have lost to North Carolina earlier this year, they might already be done. Because their schedule is awful. This past week, their win over Louisville, they were 93% likely to win according to the ESPN, the FPI model, and that was their second most likely loss the rest of the season, the first being South Carolina.
And they still got jumped in the polls by Ohio State. They came into the weekend at number 3. They left the weekend at number 4.
Yeah, it's weird. And I really hope Tua comes back for that game because that could be a really special one. All right, lastly on Fourth and Short, talked about it earlier on the podcast. Saturday's my first game inside the Big House. Give me or give anyone else who will be or is thinking about making their first trip to Michigan Stadium a rundown of the most important things to see inside Michigan Stadium.
The only thing that you want to see inside Michigan Stadium is a Michigan victory. And that brings me to my locker room speech because, Brian, when you get a chance to walk down the tunnel, you get a chance to look at all 112,000 players plus screaming fans, all you can think about is the great opportunity that you have, whether it's to call the game or whether it's to play in the game or whether it's to watch the game. It is an opportunity that very few get. And when you think about running out onto that football field and these players run out of the tunnel, it's the opportunity that you have to go out there and play Notre Dame. It is not a foregone conclusion that everybody gets that chance. It is an absolute privilege to be able to work for Michigan, to play for Michigan, or to watch Michigan in the Big House. And when Michigan takes the field against Notre Dame, I'm telling you what, they are going to be motivated because they feel like they were the better team against Penn State. They know that they could beat Notre Dame. And when they take the field, that is what they are going to do, is beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame, they had a chance to get in the Big Ten. They didn't want it. We don't want them anymore. This is the last opportunity we have, maybe for a decade, maybe for two decades. Who knows when the next time we play Notre Dame is. So this Michigan team will be ready, and they will be ready for a victory in the Big House. When you listen to this podcast, it'll come out on Wednesday morning. Listen to it on the way to work. Do your job. Do a great job at wherever you are. Be excellent every day. And then when you come home, you listen to it again. When you listen to this little pregame speech that I do, you come home, you give your wife a little peck on the cheek, give your husband a little peck on the cheek. And before you put little Brian or little Kelly down to bed, you pat him on the head, give him a kiss, and you tell him, go blue. And we'll see little Brian, little Kelly, mom and dad, everybody celebrating victory in the Big House on Saturday. Thank you for listening to In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.